Hey everyone, welcome to Wonderful World. Thank you so much for being back and being a part of this episode today. And I am looking forward to sharing with you the Sermon on the Mount as we continue to go through. But we're coming off Resurrection Sunday, and I don't know about you, but there's something about celebrating Easter Sunday that is powerful. And I know, like you know, that it is another Sunday that Christ is risen, but I will tell you, it seems like, especially during this pandemic, it was just a highlight for a lot of people in a lot of places. There was a lot of cloud nine experiences, obviously because of what I do and because of many who my friends are, pastors and others. I saw them being really encouraged, and that actually let me realize that's what Easter is about, that we get to realize the resurrection of Jesus and that there's hope. And I saw that in so many different places. Yeah, there are some, there is what I call in ministry like the big crash that can happen where you're celebrating and you're excited about Resurrection Sunday because the church is full and there's a lot of people that come. Of course, last Easter we didn't have that at all. And then this Easter we saw the churches were filling back up and there were people there and people that you haven't seen in forever and new people, and it was exciting, but that's resurrection. That's resurrection. And I just got to thinking, how can we not have the church full every week? That's not even my thought. My thought is, how can we have that life constantly, and shouldn't we have that life constantly, especially as followers of Jesus Christ? I believe that is something I should have all the time. Just that resurrected hope constantly. And so I just hope you felt that and hope you know that and that it is a constant encouragement to you, because I know that I was really excited about everything that happened. So, but here we are going back into life. It's a beautiful spring here in Georgia. The last couple of days have been really nice, and I enjoyed getting out a walk with my wife last night. Now, I don't know if people that are listening from this area understand, but if you're listening from another area, you might not know what I'm talking about, but we have these things here in South Georgia, Southeast Georgia especially, called sand gnats. And sand gnats they're of the devil. Let's just go ahead and say it. They are not of God. Has to be part of the fall in everything else that happened after man's sin. And the main reason is because when the weather gets beautiful is when they come out. So finally, when it's nice to go outside and enjoy the outdoors, here they come. And if you don't know what these sand gnats are, they have a ton of different names. I think one of the names that is from this area, no-see-ums, because you don't see them. You really don't. And they're small, and they for lack of a better word, bite you. They sting. It's just, they're just a pain. They're annoying. They get in your face. They get in your hair. And of course, some of us, they don't get in too much of our hair, but they're just so annoying. But we got to enjoy last night, and really only on the last little bit did we have come place where there were some sand gnats, but it's just a beautiful weather, beautiful time of year. I know it's, things are looking up. I was listening to the news this morning and how, the reports of, the pandemic and coronavirus, there's less cases and hospitals aren't as full, and we're seeing less deaths, and that's always a good thing. So there's a lot of encouragement whether through the vaccine, a lot of different things, but it is just encouraging for a lot of people. So I hope that you're enjoying this, and I hope life is good for you, and I just look forward to everything as we move forward and forward even more in the days ahead. So we're going to get into the Sermon on the Mount today, and I'm going to be reading from the NLT, the New Living Translation, today. I love this passage. We taught last week about salt and light, and so this week, Jesus makes a statement that if you read it, maybe in your framework, it's not as much, but if you go back and read it and understand the people he's speaking to. So he's speaking to his disciples in Matthew 5 through 7, his followers. But there was also this group of Pharisees that were always following him around, the scribes. They were always listening to everything he had to say. And he makes a statement that says, unless your righteousness, and this is probably New King James, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. that would have been mind-blowing for the people that are listening to him. And I just want you to imagine the godliest person you know, and the person that seems to love God more and most and do the most for the Lord, and for then it to be said, unless your righteousness exceeds their righteousness. That would have been the way the listeners would have heard this, and it would have seemed just so insurmountable to them. But once you understand what he means and you understand the whole context of the Sermon on the Mount and the surrounding, it begins to make sense, and it begins to let you know how Jesus viewed people and how he viewed the religious crowd. So I'm going to read just a section here in Matthew 5, and I'm actually in verse 17. And he says, don't misunderstand why I have come. And this is the big part. As a matter of fact, last week we talked about what on earth am I here for. I think that's a good question to ask about Jesus. What on earth was he here for? Why did Jesus come? We know he came to pay for the sins of all mankind, right? But could he not have done that by coming down as an adult? Why did he have to live a life, be born as a baby, live for 33 and a half years, do ministry? If he was just coming to die, that was part of the great purpose. There was bigger purpose. And he said, don't misunderstand why I have come. I did not come to abolish the law of Moses or the writing of the prophets. No, I came to accomplish their purpose. Now, some of your versions say, I came to fulfill it. He said, I didn't come to abolish it. Now, one of the pushbacks against who Jesus was is you just came to destroy everything. And what they really meant is you came to destroy our religion. We've had our religious ways and we've had our religious practices, and you are coming messing all of that up. And if there's one thing people don't like you to do is to mess up their religion. I was just watching a documentary last night. I got it. It's called Murder Among the Mormons. Had to think what it was there for a second. Murder Among the Mormons. And one thing that's interesting about this documentary, it's on Netflix, you can watch it, was there was this article. Now, I'm not going to get into the Mormon faith because there's some things there and we could obviously have a whole discussion. But Joseph Smith found these golden tablets, I guess that's the best word, this golden book. That's where the Book of Mormon came from, because this angel Moroni told him to write it down and copy it down. And so there was this document, and I'm going to get into it because if you watch Murder Among the Mormons, I don't want to spoil it for you. But there was this document that came out basically that said it wasn't an angel that guided him there, but it was a white salamander. So the salamander letters is where that comes from, and you can watch the documentary and you'll find out all about that. But the problem with the salamander letter is it like spoiled everything that Mormons believe and the basis for their faith, and it just literally shook them. Whenever you shake a people's religion, it can be not only just controversial, it can be deadly. That's why it's called Murder Among the Mormons. And so that's true for everything. So when Jesus comes and he's teaching something that seems to be so contrary, and he's saying, you know, put your faith in me. And in John 6, he's like, you know, take of my body and drink of my blood. They're like, what are you talking about? And this was just, there was mind-blowing stuff that he was saying to them, and they didn't understand. And he's talking about, you know, being poor in spirit when they were just, and all these teachings were just different for them. And so he says, I want you to understand my purpose. And my purpose is to fulfill the law. I didn't come to destroy all that. Because, if he's God, right, and we know he is God, why would he destroy the very things he ordained, the law and the prophets? I didn't come to destroy that. I didn't come to abolish that. I came to accomplish the purpose of it. I came to fulfill it. I love what I read, heard this in this past year. A guy said, that means he came to fill it full. And what the idea is, the law and the prophets, if you have a cup, it could not fill that cup. It could not complete what it needed to complete. Jesus came, poured himself into the cup to fill it up. He came because the law and the prophets are always going to leave man short of the glory of God, Romans 3. It's always going to leave us short of the glory of God. So he said, I came to fill it full. I came to complete it. I came to accomplish the purpose. And so that's the reason Jesus came, because the law and the prophets were never going to be enough. So I came to fill it full. And so he says, I tell you the truth. Until heaven and earth disappear, not even the smallest detail of God's law will disappear until its purpose is achieved. Okay, that's good. Purpose has got to be achieved, so there's no way. So I want you to once again think about the hearers. They're hearing this, and he's saying, I didn't come to destroy that. Okay, the religious crowd is like, good. Okay, he didn't come to destroy it. But then he said, I'm going to fulfill it. What do you mean you're going to fulfill it? And you got the other crowd that just finds this law completely impossible, which it was. And they find this law completely impossible. They're like, okay, good, there's another way. But then he says what he just said. Even the smallest detail of God's law is not going to disappear until the purpose is achieved. Oh, what? So we got to go back into that? You, this is like a seesaw effect in a roller coaster for all his listeners. And that's probably the best description as I study through this every time. I see it as like a roller coaster of what they're thinking and they're hearing and they're trying to figure out. He said, so if you ignore the least commandment and teach others to do the same, you'll be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. So the religious crowd is up again, right? And the other side is like, oh man, even the least commandments, I've disobeyed so many of these things and I haven't fulfilled it. So you see how this crowd is going through this. He said, but anyone who obeys God's law and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So now the religious crowd, they're really feeling good about themselves. Man, we've done this. We've been obeying all these laws. As a matter of fact, if you study it, they had added over 600 laws to the laws of God because they wanted to make sure they had everything right. And so they're feeling really good. And so once again, religious crowd is winning. And everybody that has found the law impossible to achieve is like all of us, like, I can't be good enough. And do you know, I think that's probably the biggest thing that a lot of us struggle with is the idea that I just can't be good enough. I mean, don't you? I know I do. I feel like, you know, that term falls short. Man, I've been there numerous times. And I feel like, And so a lot of people, they check out on their relationship with Jesus because they think they have to be good enough because religion seems to point to them they have to be good enough. And they're like, I'm not. I'm not good enough, and I'm never going to be good enough. So there's this real struggle back and forth. So the religious crowd is feeling really good, but here's where it comes down. He says this in verse 20. He says, but I warn you, unless your righteousness is better than the righteousness of the teachers of religious law and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Okay. Now both sides are like, what? Wait a minute. Okay, so you've got, I'm going to use the religious crowd first. So you got the religious crowd, these scribes, these Pharisees, and they're like, we keep every letter of this, and you're saying we have to be better than this? Being better than us, this is what they would say in their arrogance and their pride and in their religion, being better than us is impossible. You can't be more righteous or more religious than us. There is absolutely no way. Who do you think you are to tell people that they have to be more religious than us? Because all they're caught up with is religion. And then you have the side over there who have observed the scribes and the Pharisees on the street corners in their prayers, doing all the different things they're doing, all their phylacteries, all their garments, everything that they did and wore and said and practiced, going, well, then there's no hope for us. If we've got to be more righteous than that, there's no way. There's no way. And so I see these two crowds just kind of looking at Jesus like, so what do we do? And here's the beauty of what Jesus does. He doesn't leave them there. He says, I'll give you explanation. I'll give you explanation. And so what he does in the next, and really kind of the rest of chapter 5, is he gives them what he means by be more righteous. Because righteousness is not simply about what you do. Righteousness is about who you are. And so when Jesus begins to expound that and say that to them, okay, this is really powerful, but I don't. How do I get this, that I'm more righteousness than the scribes and Pharisees? You're putting me in an impossible place. And really, he is. He's really putting us in an impossible place to where we definitely need him. And so you have to have the righteous scribes and Pharisees. So let's get into it. I'm only going to share one with you today because we don't have, I don't want to take the time, because I'd rather take this in bites. Because if he says you're the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, that you got to exceed that, what does he mean? So he goes back to their law. And one thing that we always need to do is go back to the things that we think we know. Because when we go back to the things we think we know, we find out there's a lot of things we thought we know that we thought we knew that we didn't know. And so he goes back and he says, okay, you've heard that our ancestors were told, you must not murder. Now, we all know that, right? That's one of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. I mean, that's an easy one, thou shalt not murder. We've got that one. Everybody understands that one. And we could get all into the difference between kill and murder and understand that defending a life and something of that sort comparatively to murdering someone in cold blood, taking their life, their innocent life for no reason. But he says, you everybody knows that one. Our ancestors have always said, you don't murder. And he said, if you commit murder, you're subject to judgment. I mean, that's just obvious. You could take it all the way back to the capital punishment that was instituted with Noah after the ark. I mean, God always has a place for punishment and judgment. So he says, if you murder, there's judgment coming. But I say to you, now here's the righteous standard. That's the standard of man. That's the standard of law. But I say to you, if you're angry with someone, you're subject to judgment. Well, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. If you're angry with someone, if you have hatred in your heart, you're subject to the same judgment? I mean, so we can't differentiate between actually killing someone in cold blood and having anger and hatred? You see, when Jesus says this now, that just sets everything, because some people have justified themselves by, well, at least I didn't kill him. And can you imagine going through your life that's your standard of righteousness? Well, at least I didn't kill him. But that's the way a lot of people are going about this, and he's showing this. He said, but I say if you're even angry with someone, you're subject to judgment. Because what is anger? It's about what's on the inside of you. The law dealt with the outside of man. Jesus' righteousness came to deal with the inside of man. He said, but if you're angry with someone, you're subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you're in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you're in danger of the fires of hell. Wow. I mean, you talk about setting the bar a lot higher. If I call somebody an idiot, I'm in danger of going into the courts? Yes, because your character, it's about your character insulting their character and you becoming the judge over them. And if you curse someone and wish someone to die and wish someone evil, you're in danger of the fires of hell, because God's getting in the heart. You see, man sees, go all the way back to Samuel there before David, man sees the outward appearance, but God sees the heart, and that's the part he wants to deal with in us. And we live in a world where we try to look at the outside of everything. Even it doesn't matter if it's all the big subjects of politics and race and everything else, or even religion. We want to deal with the outside of people. And as long as we can get the outside looking right, or the way we think it should look, then everything is good. But what about the evil that is in someone's heart? Well, wait a minute, that politician's making decisions I like, or that person's doing things that I like. I approve of this or I approve of that. But what's on the inside? God wants to deal with the inside of things. And so he sets the bar a lot higher, because when he sets that bar a lot higher, all of us fall short. And so he says this, and this is where the religion is going to come back. He says, so if you're presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar, go and be reconciled to that person, then come and offer your sacrifice to God. You go back to Samuel and Saul. To obey is better than sacrifice. See, we are all about religious ritual, and he says, no, I want your heart. Because if I don't have your heart, I really don't have anything. And we know that to be true about our relationships with people. Somebody can tell me they love me. Somebody can tell me that what I want to hear. But I know when I have their heart and when I don't have their heart. And so God desperately wants our hearts. And so he says, if you're going to the altar and you're going to make your sacrifice and you're going to do your religious ritual and you remember, wait a minute, I got a brother that there's some things wrong with and I got somebody that I've offended or that I have some issues with. He says, before you bring your gift to the altar, I don't want it. I want you to go get right with your brother. God's always cared about the unity of man. I want you to go get that right, because don't think you can come and be right with me and not be right with your brother. It's that carpenter square. If everything is not right straight up and down, then it can't be right parallel with my brother, perpendicular here. So I need to get everything right between me and God, but the only way I can get everything right between me and God is being right between me and my fellow man. And the only way I can rewrite between me and my fellow man is if I'm right with God. So those things have to work together in that beautiful 90-degree angle between them and God. And so we can't just go around saying, hey, at least it didn't kill him. I know we feel like that sometimes. You ever feel like that? I know I do. Sometimes you feel like, hey, at least I didn't kill somebody today. I mean, I think for some of us, that's a successful day, right? You go to work and you're like, at least it didn't kill him. I was sharing with my family a video this morning of a little boy who just, his mom was just incensed. And obviously she posted it later on, but, you know, he had taken a marker and drawn all over himself. And he's trying to, like, make things right between him and his mom. And it's great. He says, Mom, I'll go think about this. I love it. I love his little 3-year-old brain, you know, 4-year-old brain, whatever he is. But I just love how he thinks. But I think that's what, you know, people stress us out. And you could tell, you could hear in the mom's voice just complete exasperation. And I think we feel like that a lot of times in life with people. And we say, well, at least it didn't kill him. And God's like, no, it's bigger than that. I want you to have right relationship with him. Don't bring your sacrifice. I wonder if we came to the church every week and we're going to give a sacrifice of praise with our lips, and we're going to worship God in that way, and we're going to bow before him together. What if before we did that, we made sure everything was right? I was just talking with somebody this week who they have something that is wrong between them and an individual in the church, and that individual just won't get it right between them. And I'm like, what good is coming to church and worshiping God if the person sitting next to you and behind you and around you, you don't have everything right with, or you got somebody else? So he said, no, I want your heart, and I want your heart to be right with people. So he says, when you're on the way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who will hand you over to an officer, and you'll be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you have paid the last penny. So he says, stop. Stop thinking, okay, well, I didn't kill anybody. No, I want your heart. And if I have your heart, you can't have hatred in your heart to your brother. John expounds on this, that if you have hatred in your heart toward a brother, you can't be a child of God. This is what God wants from us. And so I love this sermon because it digs deep. In a society where we're so divided, in a society where we're picking and choosing sides constantly, and where I'm on this team or that team, and I'm basing things on my denomination, or I'm basing things on my preferences, I'm basing things on my bias, I'm basing things on my partisan politics, and I'm putting all of that. He says, stop doing that. I want your heart, your commitment to me, but you can't be committed to me if you're not committed to your brother. And so that's what God wants. So let's just quit living in at least it didn't kill anybody. God wants more righteousness than that. And God, when he changes somebody's life, he removes that. And so if you still have that, man, there's something not right. And so this is where I'm at, man. I look at my own life and I'm, No wonder it's not a wonderful world sometimes. The reason it's not a wonderful world is not because it's God's fault. It's because we can't get along with one another as God would have us do. And we're just happy that we didn't kill somebody. Man, God wants to transform that. Hey, that's hard stuff. It's powerful stuff. But guess what? It gets harder from here. It gets harder from here. Because God's going to set that bar higher and higher and higher to the point where we have to have him. And this is what it's all about. I have to have Jesus in order for this to work. He's saying, you can't do this without me. You can't do this without me. You keep thinking because if you can be religious, I'll be okay, and you're going to fall short. You can't do this without me, and you can't love your brother without me, and you can't remove hatred without me. You've got to have me. I love that. Hey, I hope that is helpful to you, and I hope that maybe you embrace that today, and you look around your life and go, there's somebody I got some issues with, and I need to get that right. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's still right. And that's exactly what God wants for us. Hey, is that transformational or what? I mean, it is the roller coaster, right? Wouldn't it be? I think sometimes it would be easier if I just had a set of rules. But then I would realize how cold and callous and empty that is. And I don't want cold and callous. I want something real and transformative. And I know you do too. And I know that's what God had for all of us. I hope you have a wonderful world. I hope where it is, the weather's getting nicer for you. And even if it's not a beautiful weather, that you can look up in the sky and you can know that God sees you and that he loves you and he wants to do amazing things in your life. So go encourage somebody today. Go love somebody, help somebody. Man, as we walk through this Sermon on the Mount, we're going to see we have this call to do just that. And it's beautiful. I'm about to go to lunch with somebody in just a little while, and I'm going to enjoy the time with them and enjoy getting to know them even more. Man, do that. Sit across the table from somebody. Maybe find a complete stranger. Just love on. Let's today say, you know what? I'm going to work right where God put me in the wonderful world I am and see God do amazing things. So I hope you have a great day. And I can't wait to dig back into some of this with you next week, because he has given us a wonderful world to be a part of. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Hey, God bless. Thanks for joining me today. See you next week.